Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of React Roundup. My name is TJ Van Tol, and with me today on the panel is Paige Niedringhaus.
Hey, everyone.
And our guest today is Yash. Oh, man, I'm going to do it. Yash Garudkar? I got that correct.
That's correct.
Excellent.
Did you work your tail off to get that senior developer gig just to realize that senior dev doesn't actually mean dream job? I've been there, too. My first senior developer job was at a place where all of our triumphs were the bosses and all the failures were ours. The second one was a great place to continue to learn and grow, only for it to go under due to poor management. And now I get job offers from great places to work all the time. Not only that, but the last job interview I actually sat in was a discussion about how much my podcast had helped the people interviewing me. If you're looking for a way to get into your dream job, then join our Dev Heroes Accelerator. Not only will we help you get the kind of exposure that makes you attractive to your dream employer, but you'll be able to ask them for top dollar as well. Check it out at devheroesaccelerator.com.
Yash, why don't you start by telling us who you are, why you're famous, all those good sorts of things.
Yeah, so hello, everyone. First of all, Paige and TJ, and I'm really glad to be here. Thank you for having me. I started doing community work and writing a few blogs here and there, and I started to get recognition from there. So getting little sessions and doing talks for my friends and my colleagues and aspiring software engineers or React developers, more specifically.
Cool. Well, I know like there's a couple of things we wanted to talk about today. So one of them is about a blog post you wrote about working with AWS. So maybe you could talk a little bit about how you found AWS, what got you into it, what sort of made you want to write about it as well.
Yeah. So a friend of mine works in a company named, I don't really remember, but that company works with Amazon to build the products, right? So he has a good knowledge in backend in AWS. So he introduced me to AWS, and he was a AWS community builder of sorts. So he gave me all the resources where I can learn it. So I'm still on the track, I'm still learning. And I thought about why not create something and create a blog about it, right? So I created a blog and that's it. It went off.
Do you want to explain like to people that are new to AWS, just the very beginner, like what the AWS is and like what some of the tech that's most sort of applicable to a React audience?
Yeah, so if you are a React developer and you are trying to build a backend with AWS, so it is pretty much everything is available with AWS, right? So you want to build an ML application, an AI application, or maybe even a function like AWS Lambda function, so serverless architecture, or you can say GraphQL APIs with the use of Amplify, as I did in that blog. So you can take anything in the backend and complete it with your React frontend. So you can be a full stack engineer in that way of manner, you know? So understanding the monolithic way of building Node.js was cool. I learned Node.js and tried to build APIs and build full stack applications. So after that, it was something about automating the process and making the process for making backends a little faster, you know? And the whole point of using AWS is like bootstrapping the backend and working on it on the go as the features are needed. So if anyone wants to be an AWS engineer, or you can say someone who knows AWS pretty well or master the art, yeah, so you can pretty much do it from the documentation itself. The documentation is really great. And especially that the Amplify documentation that I learned the Amplify, or where I learned the Amplify, it is written by Nader Dabit. You might have heard of him. It was great documentation. I have not seen a better documentation of a technology than that. Yeah,
I'm a big fan of him. I follow him on Twitter. Yes. So a question for you is, I've worked with AWS probably about 4 years ago now. And at the time, it was a very intimidating interface. It wasn't very clear like how to do a lot of things. And you just kind of had to figure it out or have somebody else who knew to teach you, to show you exactly what you needed, because there is so much available. So how is it now if you're, I guess, a complete beginner or very new to cloud applications? Like, how is the getting into it and kind of understanding what you're doing portion of it?
Definitely. So it totally depends on the area you're working with, right? So for example, you're working with cloud, they have their training modules by AWS itself, right? So there are these videos and these small tasks that you can complete, and they're like a real task. You're actually working with that architecture and that cloud and creating cloud modules, or if you may say. So that helps a lot in the process. So documentation over there has improved pretty very, very, very good. So in the start of 2019, I think, so I was introduced to AWS by myself only. I was searching technologies and something that would have a scope in future, you know. So I was a student until 2020. I'm just a graduate from in computer engineering. And at the time, I did not have a clear path to follow, you know. So I started searching, I started Googling, I ran into AWS. And at the time, the documentation was really difficult to understand for me also. So I could not pursue at that time because I did not have a lot of knowledge of how to read the documentation is such a thing. So it is not really easy as it seems at start. But as you get to work with it, as you start to implement it and get introduced to few people who know it, a mentorship, like in my life, my friend was a mentor. He's a mentor. He helps me a lot still. So that helps a lot, that I will say. And it has grown through the years very nicely. And as I just said, the Amplify documentation is great. So I hope just every product of AWS has that kind of documentation, you know. So it is so perfect. So if you just try to go through the steps only, at the end of the application, you will be working with a created like full app, built app. It was not that easy 2 years back. Definitely.
Yeah, it's funny because Paige, I share your concern. Like AWS to me has always seemed super powerful, but also I look at their like drop down of list of products and I want to just like cry and walk away from it because it's just, they throw a lot at you. Like I almost feel like you need, like you could totally specialize your career in just doing AWS stuff. So like with that sort of context in mind, could we dive into like the specifics of Amplify? Like what features is like, I'm an average React developer, right? What is Amplify doing for me that would be hard for me to do otherwise?
Okay. So as a React developer, if you are only working with the front end, what happens is we are given this endpoints of the back end, right? So usage of Amplify, you will be building the backend by yourselves and totally using the CLI and editing the structure of or the model, you may say. So if I want to add some data, I will be working with the model. If I want to upload images, I will be working with S3. If I want to work with the serverless functions, then I'll be working with Lambda functions and selecting DB. So by default, but DynamoDB is what is used for AWS architecture. So as a React developer, what it will do for you is you don't have to worry about or, you know, work or learn a lot of things. So you only have to learn this library that is Amplify and how to use the CLI, how to work with models and S3 buckets, database. And if you want to do something with AI and ML, you can build that also, or analytics also. So how it works is you spend less to no time building the backend. For example, if you want to build an application, let's say a blog, right? So you won't be needing a architecture using a Node. Then you will maybe use SQLize or another library like with Mongoose, like for Mongo and SQLize or SQL. You don't have to figure out those things. I don't have to create those paths and secure that with auth. Everything just comes into your, it's literally a plate. And you just have to pick the things that you need and then encapsulate your application in it. So if you look as a backend developer, you're building this full application in the backend, right? So you have to make sure all the routes are they need auth to access, right? You need to make sure they are protected. You don't have to do that in Amplify. You just have to give a auth command in the CLI. You just have to Amplify add auth. You add auth by that, And the next thing you do is encapsulate the export of the React application. If, you know, we exported the export default and app name, we just have to give it the way we do it in Redux, right? Like connect the app. Similarly, we just have to give the authentication and we just have to encapsulate it back. Directly, you get a login page. And not only just that, you can complete, they also give you this React component. So you can take those components and customize those and specifically according to your needs and your, the way you want your UI to look like.
Yeah, this is kind of slick, actually. I'm just sort of skimming over your blog post and the docs as you've been talking, because it does kind of solve sort of my problem with AWS in that, like, under the hood, it's kind of using some of these services, but I don't have to, like, manually go to AWS and figure out how to allocate a S3 bucket, or I'm not even sure I'm using the right acronyms, right? It's kind of encompassing this. So I'm curious, do you get, like, on the AWS side of things, do you get, like, a consolidated, like, dashboard where you can see, like, all the features that you've been using and you can configure
features and projects.
Cool. Yeah, this is very interesting. I did not know this existed at all. Do you know, like, I'm curious the pricing for this, and like, do you get charged like per service you add, or like, is it the amount you use? I'm sort of perusing their website now as well.
Yeah. So I'm not 100% sure about it, but it's around 1 million hits are free. So when I started to learn Lambda, I learned a little, I could not pursue it further. I have to continue that path again. It's a little, I've forgotten it a little. But at the time, it was like 1 million hits were free. So as if you keep the API calls and the server calls below 1 million and 1 month, you don't have to pay at all. And after that, the fee per API call or per serverless function call, it is very low. It is, I don't exactly remember, but it is really, really low. It is around a 10th or 100th of a dollar. I don't remember. I'm sorry if that's not correct.
Yeah, that's been one of my other problems with some of these like cloud providers is like the free tiers are usually quite generous. And for things like side projects or little things, it's like, whatever, right? Like no big deal. You're paying nothing slash like a couple bucks here or there. It's not a big deal, but it's always like they, like I'm looking at the site now and it's like, oh, it's $0.023 per gigabyte stored per month. And it's, you look at something like that and go like, why, if I'm running something at like Progress or the Home Depot scale or like some huge company, it's like, I don't know. You like, sometimes I feel like you almost have to just like try it on a project and see what your bill is and go from there. Cause it gets incredibly hard to estimate out these stuff for like bigger stuff.
So imagine if you are in a startup culture or you have your own startup and your own product. So it is so easier and you don't have to pay at all. As long as they are not alive.
Yeah. And I think I get the sense that this is very much optimized towards that sort of persona, right? Like they're, because like lots of times big sort of enterprises also, they have something they have to use for their data and their auth, and they can't necessarily just switch everything over to AWS, at least not easily. Whereas like, that's actually a really good point. Like you said, like startup, something new, something like it's super easy and cheap and like, your bill's going to be quick and your bill's going to be like nothing to start. And then if you do grow, well, that's a good problem to have, right? Then you can figure out what to do.
Yeah. So I'm curious.
Please cut your page.
Well, I'm curious because my team has plenty of applications where we have full front ends built with React, but we have Node servers and Express running the back ends. How difficult or easy is it to kind of take that code out of the server and put it onto something like AWS, Lambda functions?
It is a good idea, but it will grow with over time. You have to work on it side by side, I think. And slowly, slowly, you can port your backend over there. So even your application, if you look at it, it is not something that was built in around a month or a year. You know, it's like years of work. So it will definitely take more time, but it will become more scalable and more easier to work with once it is at a certain stage. And I've always liked to work with Express and Node. It is great to work with that also. But this is something different.
Is it something that you could do partially with AWS Lambda functions and partially with Node if you were trying to do something like you're describing of moving just little pieces of it at a time?
Yeah, definitely. You can do that. I think like most of the AWS functions that are working on Node only. So you can create your own serverless functions in your Node application and handle it through that. If you have auth services, so you can use the auth pools that created in AWS. And according to that pools, you can handle your backend auth. So you can slowly move over there. Definitely.
Cool. So I'm curious, how did you, I know you started learning AWS, but how did you decide, I want to teach other people how to use this? Because that's, it's really a challenge learning something new, and it's even more of a challenge trying to teach somebody else who doesn't know it.
Right. So there was such thing as I did not fall in love with code. Like every developer's falls in, like some time. I was in third year of my engineering in a total of 4 years, and I did not like to code. I was doing great. I was solving problems and doing practicals at college, but it really did not give me any sort of, I did not feel happy at that point. So there was this, you guys might know this Google Dev Fest, right? Mm-hmm. So this was, Google Dev Fest was held in Nashik for the first time in 2019, late 2019. And I was one of the volunteers, trying to do some work. So I couldn't get the whole lecture. Speakers came out there, and I just saw this whole dynamic of people coming and forming the community, helping others. It is not just just talking about technology. It is also about getting other people referring to their companies to get jobs and all that stuff. And at a certain point, it hit me that this might actually be cool. So I started learning Node, and slowly I started to build applications. First, then I built this project for my final year with Node.js, and I used like embedded JavaScript PJS for that front end. I did not have much knowledge about React. I knew React, and I always knew I had to learn it at some point, but the time was really less that I had, So I was doing my lectures. I was doing 9 to 5 college, 6 o'clock. I used to come home. Then I used to learn, and I used to build the app. And at night, I used to study. So that's how it was going. And at certain point, I thought that someone like the speakers in the DevFest community, someone inspired me to do it. Maybe I can help others to learn this and, fall in the love with code. So as soon as that hits, you don't have to worry about that person. So that person can get out there and get jobs. I'm trying to do the same with my college friends also, with the juniors and stuff.
It almost sounds like you might be better suited, or you might be very well suited to like a developer relations job yourself, if that's, or being like a lot of these course creators on Udemy and YouTube and things like that, if you really like helping other people to learn the stuff that you're learning.
Yeah, thank you. It's really nice to hear that. I do have a few plans, but I think I'm a little young of an age, I'm just 22. I just started working. I have not completed even a year as a developer. But the experience has been really great. As I joined remotely, as I said earlier. So it has been a difficult process to go through, as I have no idea how things go in the actual office. So it will be really nice once this COVID situation is ended, and I can start planning something like that, as you said, creating course and pursue a job in developer relations, something like that. It will be really nice.
Yeah, it has to be an awkward time for COVID to hit too, as you're starting that too. Like, it's funny because I don't really think about things. Like, I always think about that with people like entering a new phase of their life during this, right? Because for me, it's like, well, I've been doing the same thing for a long time, but like, kids going to new levels of school or graduating or starting new jobs. It's like crazy how like it's a totally different experience for everybody right now.
Yeah. So let me just share this experience on my side. Okay. So it was around March, I think. So there is this thing called as Sandeep Otsav. The college I went to was is named Sandeep Foundation. And there was this show, like an annual gathering, you may say, or annual function. So we were planning that. I'm a huge fan of fashion also. I like clothing. And I started to design, you know, the fashion show. I finally got a chance to do the choreography and handle that whole dynamic, all the students and do that. I started to plan that 5 days in. I started to take a student, select student for this fashion show for the gathering. And they announced that the college was going for a lockdown. You know, everything was going in lockdown. College was shut down. So that really came crashing down, and everything is finally like out of nowhere. Everything is sitting at home, and we are just talking around. And it was around 3 months that situation lasted, and the lockdown was felt like forever. I still can't remember when the lockdown ended. I'm still sitting at home. It's been literally 15 days. I live in a flat in a building. It has already been around 15 days. I have not even went one step down from my house.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's really bad. So
that is bad.
That's really bad. That's really sad. But yeah, it's fine that I have something to put my mind towards, that, like my work or maybe learning a thing. But that was really bad. And after that, it was around 6 months of just lying around trying to build new projects. And another point that I'd like to add to the question you asked on an earlier page, about helping others. So as a developer and the education, or the, you can say, the learning curve of the actual software engineering students is a little broken, because you can see that all these textbooks and all these algorithms are there, but in real life, the implementation is really small, and software engineering is the biggest part of this thing, right? So this is the product, this is where I want to be, and this is where I am right now. So there is no clean path that the students are aware of. I felt myself really left out when everyone was joined for the company. You know, we all got placed in different companies. So they had their paths, or they had their training modules designed for them. So I did not have something like that. And didn't get to a point. So I started searching for things like that online. So that is also one thing that I would like to add to that answer, to help others to find a direction towards that goal that they want to reach.
I'm actually curious. This is just kind of a random question, but what is the curriculum like when they're is web development part of what is taught in a standard like university college curriculum now, or like what sort of tech is being taught nowadays?
It's a little outdated, I will say. I think they did make a few changes for good, but it is not really the latest stuff. All we learn is about software engineering is agile methodologies and waterfall model and something. And there are many subjects, the knowledge is spread around, but web technologies, as you said, it is a part of the curriculum and the syllabus revolves around it, but not about the applications, of course, right? So there is basics, yeah. Like HTML, it starts with HTML, CSS. In the first year, it started with that. And in second year, it got a little difficult, not difficult, I'll say. It is like a step up to jQuery, and slowly it evolved, and finally it came to React and Angular, introduction and small applications were built in the practical. So education system is a little broken, and I think that is always going to stay like that. System should always be working towards it, but they just keep on working it, and the technology will keep going forward. So it is always going to be a work in progress, I think.
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say the technology moves so fast that I think it would be really, really difficult to keep a course current or up to date with the latest and greatest that's coming out, especially if you choose to do something like JavaScript, which is really evolving at a rapid clip, versus something like Java or C that's more established and more kind of foundational, I guess, at this point.
Yeah, definitely. And we can already see the trends, you know, the TypeScript and JavaScript are more very liked languages, and Ruby is there, but these are not included in the curriculum. The curriculum includes C++ and Java. Like for me personally, I like to work with, if I'm doing competitive programming, or if I'm, you know, trying to do something like that, I use C++ or maybe TypeScript, because it makes me build the strongly typed application. That is something that I try to do with that. But C++ and Java has always been a part of the curriculum, and DS and algorithms, of course.
So another question I have is, you definitely very knowledgeable about these topics, like an impressive amount for someone that's just out of school. I'm curious, like, because we have other young developers that listen to this podcast, like, what sort of advice do you have for people to sort of get involved and learn some of this stuff?
Well, first thing I'll like to say to them is that you're not the only ones feeling this way, that you don't have a sense of direction, you can say, or you don't know what to do next. So first thing you have to do is search for friends. Or, you know, there is one person in your classroom that is actually doing something, you know, he is building something. So reach out to that guy or find someone on Twitter maybe, or just try to find these sessions online. As you get to them, try to find mentors, you know, just ask them if, can you please mentor me and can you please teach me, or maybe, you know, give me a sense of direction that I should move on to. And once that road is given to the student, nothing else is needed. Pretty much everything is out there. You need to learn React. You have Udemy courses. You need to learn Node. There are Udemy courses, AWS Udemy courses. There are creators like Nader David. You guys are there. It is actually really impressive and really helpful, like a podcast like this. It helps a lot. But the thing is that connecting with that podcast, you know, this is only going to happen with conversation with our friends or the colleagues, as I just said.
I like the sentiment of you're not the only one feeling this, because I will say that still applies even if you start doing this for a while, because the tech world does change so fast. And like the stuff, I mean, I learned back in my day, I learned in C++, and I don't write C++ anymore, right? So like you constantly have to learn new things, and it's okay to admit like this is confusing and overwhelming and figuring out how to deal with that.
Definitely. So I had one curiosity I'd like to ask both of you guys. So how long have you been working with React, and like what is your current projects or what you are currently building with your companies or something, or even your side project?
Hey folks, if you love this podcast and would like to support the show, or if you wish you could listen without the sponsorship messages, then you're in luck. We're setting up new premium podcast feeds where you can get all of the episodes released after Christmas 2020 without the ads. Signing up will help us pay for editing and production. And you can go sign up at devchat.tv/premium.
So I've been working with React professionally for probably about the past three and a half years. So I started with React 16, some version of React 16 when class-based components were still a thing. Yeah. And as my team has been building our application and improving it for the Home Depot, I work on an internal team there. We've moved into functional components. We've upgraded to a React version that supports hooks. So we're using almost the latest and greatest. I was going to say the latest, but we haven't upgraded to version 17 yet. So we're still on a late version of 16, but that's what we're using. So we're using the latest, that's available in that. And then for side projects, it's actually funny that you mentioned this. I'm working on a course right now for a company called Newline, and all they do is courses and books. They've done like full stack React. They've done React with D3. They've done Angular. They do all sorts of things, but I'm actually working on a course for modernizing enterprise React apps, which I have a good bit of experience with considering what I do for my day job. So that's actually been really fun, though, because I have been using the latest version of React for this sample application that I'm upgrading. It's been fun to get into that and see kind of some of the new changes that are available and the cleaner syntax that's there. So it's been a really interesting and good experience so far.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, and for me, so I work at Progress as a developer advocate. And because I'm a developer advocate, I don't work on like a big production real world app, which I think is both like, it's kind of a good thing and a bad thing. So it's a good thing in the sense that a lot of what I do work on are like little demo apps. So we make a component library, kind of React. And so a lot of my work is I have to build an app. We have a new Gantt chart that's a part of kind of React. Well, I have to build an app to show people what it is, how it works, maybe record a video or write a blog post about it. So I do a lot of stuff like that. I do a lot of like podcasts like we're doing right now. I also run a show called React Wednesdays where I bring in people to talk about React oriented stuff. But I do try to also like, I have one side project I've been working on that's a little utility for Pokemon Go, because I'm a Pokemon Go player. And right. I do like having that though, because it is nice to have like an app that's real, and I'll put real in air quotes, right? Cause it's not like something super serious, but there are people that use this utility app. So it's not something that's like, right. So it's real enough that I don't want to like break it. But it gives me the chance to like, I can use whatever a new React feature comes out. It gives me a place that like, hey, I can actually push this to real users and stay connected. Because one challenge of a developer advocate is, because you're not like, I guess, like in the trenches, right? I'm not in a production app that like, I to like relate to developers, I have to feel the struggles of people that are dealing with real big apps and have real big problems.
Great. Yeah. I'd like to try it also.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun building side projects. Like I did one recently that was my own personal website, and I built that with Gatsby, which is kind of a superset of React, I guess. And it was fun because the syntax is a little bit different. There's a big plugin ecosystem. I had to figure out how to deploy it to Netlify. I wanted to use a submodule in it to keep some content private while making the rest of the repo open. So all that kind of stuff is just great experience as well for things that you didn't consider before, new ways to do things, or blog content if you're looking to write and teach other people about the struggles that you encountered while building your own stuff. So that's a huge part of just being a developer, is trying stuff out and figuring out what works and what doesn't.
Right.
Side projects are the ultimate thing to over-engineer. Like, it's absolutely, like, it, no, normally it's discouraged, but for side projects, like, that's how you learn, right? Is you go nuts.
Yeah, exactly. So Yesh, are you building any side projects currently that you're excited about or that you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, so I was just talking about this to my friend last night over call. I was just thinking about something like a dating application or something of the sorts. So yeah, I'm thinking about it. So I have built the whole database design and all the architecture that should go behind it. So, you know, overclock it, like as you just said. So you can just create a simple to-do application and put it on AWS. You can use the best resources for this tiny application. That's how you learn. So yeah, I'll first figure out that, and after that, I'll create that application. Other than that, I'm working on this. I just have this idea of creating a Udemy course, as you just said earlier. So I have to perfect it on paper right now. You know, I want to clear the goal of that I want to create, you know. So it is not just that I have to create, take care of the production and, you know, the mic, the camera, and learn a little bit of video editing. So considering all those dynamics, and when it is ready, I'll start recording, and hopefully I'm think about doing something in that space also. And I'll really like to see your course also, as you said, modern web apps.
Absolutely. Yeah, it should be coming out, I think, in the middle end of July. So when it does, everybody's going to get notified of it multiple times on social media and wherever else I can. Yes. I'll probably come on this podcast and talk about it, for instance.
Yes, right. Yeah, I'll definitely connect with you guys so I can test out your side projects and your courses.
Yeah, well, we're going to need to have you back on when your dating app takes off. We got to talk about AWS's pricing structure at scale, right? When you're
great. Yeah, I really hope that happens. Yeah. Another thing that I'd like to ask you guys also is how does developer from a country like India tries to get a job in American company, maybe a remote work, or, you know, after this situation is over. So have you seen or met people like they have relocated, something like that? So would you like to go into like that, how they got their chances? Maybe you know something or some experience.
Sure. So we have such a large IT workforce for Home Depot. I know we contract with a lot of companies, and that's how we find some of the people who end up coming to work for us full-time. So typically, at least from what I understand, the contracting companies, they're typically not contract to hire. So if you contract with them, that's pretty much it. You'll have your team member for maybe 18 months or 2 years, depending on kind of what the deal is. But there are some people who are just really exceptional, and Home Depot wants to get to work for them full time. And in those instances, a lot of times what we have to do in order to get the green card situation filled out is that those workers will have to go work for another company for 6 months or 6 months or a year, depending on how long it takes. But a lot of times they'll do that to get a green card, and then they'll come back and work for Home Depot because they really enjoyed working for them. So it's kind of, it's not a straight line by any means. And I don't think that Home Depot is particularly unique in this scenario, but I'm not sure. But that's kind of the advice I would have for somebody, is to try and get in to the company that you might want to work for full time, even if it's a contract position. And then hopefully there is some way for you to transfer to working for them instead of the contracting company that's hired you.
Yeah,
it's going to be very interesting to see. Unfortunately, I've worked with plenty of other Indian developers, but I don't have a good insight into the logistics around how that works, other than I know it's like way more complicated than it should be. Basically, any story I've heard about it is it's like it gets very into legalese and sort of craziness. It will be sort of interesting to see how this plays out with the pandemic, if it's going to move more towards remote positions, or I don't know. I wish I knew more and I could predict the future, but fortunately, I don't know.
I also saw some companies, few companies that I saw on LinkedIn or somewhere, they are just permanently creating their companies like for their employees, wherever it is possible, like 100% work from home, even after COVID. So it was nice to hear, but I think there is some connection with the office, So there is this work-life balance going on, and you just go to a place and work and come back home. So the workplace is that, and this is my home. And everything just comes together. So like it is fine for you guys, I think. So I'm currently staying with my family. So it is like already, every day is chaos and I'm working.
Yeah. I think a lot of people have been experiencing that. And from what I understand, and TJ can speak more to this than I can, because I've only been working from home since the pandemic. According to people who do it full time, it's not always like that. It's a lot less. Yeah. This is a lot more chaotic, I think, than the typical work from home scenario might be.
Yeah, because typically when you're working from home, you're not working from home. That's also during a pandemic, right? So things are a little bit different. But I don't know, like we could have a whole conversation about work from home, because there's a lot of benefits, but then there's also a lot of downsides too, because lots of times it becomes just you, and you miss out on a lot of the ties that you have with coworkers. And sometimes you have a tendency to become super isolated, and you have to like fight against that. You almost have to like overcompensate and be like more social in the other parts of your life to compensate for the fact that you are just sitting in a chair by yourself for a good chunk of the week.
Yeah, definitely. Otherwise, looking at imagine the work from home situation like a bubble. So you will see that all we are doing is just looking at the screens and taking calls. But it is not the same in office. There is this fun going on. If there's someone's birthday, they're celebrating that for a little while. So these connections do matter, I think. Otherwise, and as the work from home situation has started, these things has reduced to almost nothing.
Yep.
It's true.
Well, yes, this has been a ton of fun. Are there any topics that we've missed or that we haven't got to that we wanted to, or do you have any other things you want to discuss?
Yeah, I had one question. So I'd like to know the process of how you guys as a team in the at your workplaces start to work with the idea and go towards the product, start building and complete that product. So what does that methodology or thinking of the process goes into that? So I'd like to know that.
You want to go first, TJ?
Man, I feel like I need to take a deep breath before starting with this, because right, people write entire books about this. I could give you the short version of how things work at Progress. So at Progress, we're a company that builds a lot of stuff for tech, but obviously tech changes a lot, right? So we want to try to be riding the waves of new things, right? Or whatever other metaphor. So we have a process internally to the company called Progress Labs, which is basically like an innovation ground. Like if somebody has a cool idea, hey, I think virtual reality is the future. And I think we could make, we could sell, I don't know, I'm coming up with the worst idea ever here, but we could sell some widgets in virtual reality and make a lot of money. Essentially, yeah. We have a program in place to sort of incubate those ideas, to like help validate, like, okay, maybe let's devote some bit of resources towards this to help like validate, is there something here, right? Is there, not only is this like a decent idea, but is there a business opportunity here? Because for better or worse, Progress, we're a company, like usually we want some sort of way of making money off of these ideas eventually. So it's like an incubation period where we can try it out, validate, see if there's some market there. And there's a bit of structure to it. So we try to like balance it. It's always hard, but we try to balance between work that's got to supports the stuff we have versus trying to be developing the next great thing. And like I said, that right. part of it, how you strike that balance and how you do it is like, man, we could bring on, like there are people that specialize in that sort of thing. And it's a tricky topic.
So for my team on Home Depot, we're an internal team and we actually support other Home Depot associates with our application. So it's a little bit easier in that we have the user feedback right there at our fingertips. So it's easy to have a conversation with one of our users and say, what is it that you need to do your job? And then kind of try and figure out what we can do to help them do their job faster and easier and give them more information that they need. Because typically what they'll end up doing is going to several different sources to get all the different pieces of info they need to manage to do their jobs. And what we're trying to build is an application that has all those pieces of information easily accessible to them so that it takes them less time to actually do what they need to do and then get on with the rest of their day because they're super busy with what they are normally tasked with. So it's a lot of user interviews, which our UX partner handles the majority of. And then once they've got the feedback, figuring out, okay, based on what they've all told us, what can we build as a solution that will help them do their job easier? And then creating stories from that, which our product manager is responsible for, and then us picking up those stories as the developers and actually implementing the features is kind of the way that it typically goes. But it's a very collaborative process. It's very much discussions and kind of agreements on what's possible, what the technology allows us to do, what data we have at our disposal. So it's a really good team like collaboration for the most part. And I hope that's how the majority of the teams working on all these different products to support such a large company operate as well.
Yeah, that's nice.
Well, cool.
Also, another one question I had for TJ. So as you just said, your work is in a developer advocate, right?
Yep.
So what are the things that maybe like the necessary or you know, the steps a person should follow, you know, someone like me, to get a job as a developer advocate? And can you just shed a little light on that?
Yeah, it's developer advocate is a role that's kind of tricky because your ideal developer advocate is kind of like both a good engineer and also a good teacher. So, I mean, honestly, it sounds like you're kind of down the right path because you want someone that has engineering talent, because an advocate, really you're advocating or you're trying to teach someone about a certain technology. So you actually have to genuinely know that tech halfway decently. And then you also have to be able to communicate that. So either being good at writing or being good at videos or good at speaking, or like ideally if you get someone that can do all of those things, then that's just a nice bonus. So usually what I tell anybody that wants to get into developer advocacy is first of all, just keep doing the sort of engineering work you're doing, because that's going to be important, but just work on how you can get better at teaching people about those things. And that, like I said, that can be writing, that can be speaking, that can be blogging. It can be some combination of all of those things. It kind of just depends on what you're interested in, and just keep doing that. Watch people that you think are good at it, sort of steal good ideas from them. If you see someone that's really good at videos, see what techniques they're using, try to replicate that, try to build upon that sort of thing, and just sort of experiment with what your interests are and go from there.
Okay. yeah, that's really informative. Thank you.
Cool. Yesh, why don't we move into, did we tell you about the pick segment that we do at the end of our episodes? So essentially we basically pick something that's just interesting from our lives. It could be music, it could be movies, it could be tech too. It could be like a good book you read recently. So Paige, do you want to kick us off with your pick to start?
Hey folks, I don't know if you've noticed, but I've been working a lot on figuring out how to help people become the most valuable developers on their teams or becoming the top 5% of developers in the field. If you're looking to level up, figure out how to contribute more, get the career that you want that will support the lifestyle you want, then you should check out the Most Valuable Dev Summit. I've invited some of my friends across the community, people that you've heard of, people that have worked on systems that you use on a daily basis, people who have invented new ways of doing things over the years in programming, and I've asked them one question, and that question is, how do you become a top 5% developer? How do you become 1 in 20 of the best developers out there? And so we're going to go ahead and have that conversation with them in interviews on the Most Valuable Dev Summit. And you can find that at summit.mostvaluable.dev.
Sure. I actually have two picks this week. I just thought of one because we're watching it on TV. But the first pick that I'll do is the Pragmatic Programmer book. And I know that it's been around forever and it's been widely recommended as a really good read for anybody who's in software engineering, regardless of what type of engineering or what languages you use. And I finally got around to reading it myself, and it was very applicable still today. So I would highly recommend it. I think it just celebrated its 20th anniversary recently. So it's just a really good book, though, for kind of the larger concepts about making good programs and writing good code versus this is a particular framework or this is a particular technique or a particular algorithm. So I would definitely recommend that. And then on the lighter side of things, since we're all still looking for stuff to watch on TV, there's an older show. It's older and that it ended its run a few years ago, and it's called Superstore. And it's kind of a silly sitcom that's on Hulu, I think. You can probably find it elsewhere. But it's fun because it's these people who are working in what would be considered like a Walmart or maybe a Kmart, and just the weird things that customers do and the weird situations that they get into among the store staff having issues and problems with each other. So it's been really fun to watch. So those are going to be my two picks for the week.
Cool. Yeah, I remember seeing ads for it, but I haven't actually watched it, so I might have to check it out.
Yeah, a friend of mine actually recommended it to me because I had not really been interested in watching it either, and it turned out to be really good.
Cool. I have one pick for this week. I'm going to pick a podcast called Decoder. So I've previously picked, I'm a big fan of The Verge. They do The Verge Cast, which is a podcast I like that I like it because it just covers like general tech stuff. So that's sort of like how I keep up to date on what Apple, Google devices are going on. So The Decoder is by the same guy that runs The Verge Cast, Nilay Patel, and it's basically an interview style podcast. So he tends to bring in people that are like executives at tech companies or just doing interesting things in tech and talk to them. And I found it super interesting. So that is my pick for this week. Yesh, what picks do you have for us?
So I really can't think of anything right now. Yeah. So do you item? I'm sorry, I can't think of anything right now. So yeah. Like, what are the topics to talk about in this pick section?
It could be anything. Like, is there a good show, a good movie you've watched recently? Is there like a good course you've taken that you've learned quite a bit from?
Okay, so I'll recommend two things. So the first will be a course by Maximilian Schwarzmüller. If I'm not spelling it the incorrect way. So this was a Node course that I'm pursuing right now. I'm towards the end of it. And it is a great course. I'd like to recommend it to everyone who is trying to pursue something in backend development in Node.js. And the second thing will be this series named Dark. I think you guys might have heard of it.
Well, just Dark?
Yeah, just Dark on Netflix. I just completed it yesterday.
Nice.
It's great. You guys will really like it, you know? There's okay. Some, yeah.
So I'm really excited that you mentioned Max, because I've taken a React class from him, or an online tutorial, and he was fantastic as a teacher. So that's good to know that he's made other really good courses, because I really like his style of teaching.
Same here. I've learned the React course from him. So I started with little on the Coursera. I didn't find it fun enough. Max does a really great job of making it fun in the process of learning.
Yeah, he does.
Yes, this has been really fun. Last question for you. If people want to follow you, keep track of you, that sort of thing, where's a good place to do that?
Okay, so let me just share with you guys my LinkedIn and my Twitter.
Yep, and I think we have this in the document here, so we can definitely make sure those things end up in the show notes.
Yeah, please share with me, you both also, your Twitter handles or LinkedIn or something like that. Stay connected. Really like to test out your products.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Yash. And I think that is it for today. So thanks for joining us. This was really an awesome chat. I had a lot of fun.
Same here.
All right, everybody. Until next week.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.